Chapter 4. The Beast People. We got to the building, and after eating, Moreau started to speak.
Now I'll explain, but this is the last time that I am kind to you.
He sat smoking a cigar. I sat on a chair far away from him. The table was between us, and I had the two guns in my hands. Montgomery was not with us, but that was good because I did not feel at ease with the two of them in such a little room.
So, Prendick, are you convinced now that the being you saw in the laboratory was a puma and not a man?
Well, perhaps, but...
No buts. Come with me.
I followed him into the laboratory, where I saw that poor thing horribly vivisected. All right, it's the puma, I admitted. Still alive, but hope I'll never see a living being again so cut and mutilated. When we got back to my room, I started to speak.
But how could you do such a horrible thing?
Stop, Prendick, stop,
he interrupted me.
You're getting very boring. You're speaking as Montgomery did at the beginning. It's just an animal, after all.
I was going to reply, but he immediately continued.
It's surprising that no one else has tried to do the work I've done. Of course, doctors have been able to change bodies and carry out surgical operations on people for many years. Think of amputations, for example, or nose reconstructions using tissues from other parts of the body. What about teeth? They can be taken from someone's mouth and put into another mouth. Bits of an animal's body can be used to repair a man's body, and so on. The creatures you've seen aren't only modified animals. I've done much more. I've changed their organic functions, their vital functions.
But those animals, those things out there, talk.
Yes, they do. The possibilities of vivisection aren't limited to simple physical modifications. The people on this island were built in my laboratory. Their bodies were accurately cut and combined with other animals' parts. They're new creatures with new shapes. I changed their blood and then used hypnotism to shape their minds. Now they feel and think in a different way, and they've even learned to talk.
So the creatures I had seen were not men. They had never been men. They were animals, humanized animals, triumphs of vivisection. But why did you give these animals the human shape?
Are we talking about religion or science, Prendick? If we're talking about religion, I can tell you that I'm a religious man, as every sane man must be. If we're talking about science, I can say that perhaps I've seen how God made this world better than you. I've tried to understand His laws, in my way, all my life, while you, I believe, have been collecting butterflies. And I tell you, pleasure and pain have nothing to do with heaven or hell. Pleasure and pain, bah!
I still can't understand. How can you torture those poor animals? How can you bear their cries of pain?
Listen, you and me are different, but not completely different. It's this thing that you call pain which makes us different from each other. As long as you're a slave to pain, as long as you connect pain to sin, you'll be just an animal, a human animal.
Having said that, he moved his chair so that I could see him completely and took a small knife from his pocket. Then he drove the knife into his thigh and soon after took it out. What's the meaning of that? I asked, rather scared.
It means that pain isn't in our muscles but in our brains. Pain is simply our advisor, which informs us and stimulates us to react. The more intelligent men become, the more comfortable their existence will be, and the less they'll need the advisor to keep them out of danger. I've never heard of a useless thing that was not eliminated by evolution sooner or later, and pain will become useless.
But where's your justification for giving these animals all this pain? I think that the only thing that could excuse vivisection would be some practical application.
Precisely. Each of my experiments gives the answer to a big question. But, immediately afterwards, the answer becomes a new big question, which needs an answer, and so on.
But all this is horrible. It's an abomination before God.
I don't care about ethical questions,
he continued.
The study of nature makes a man at last as remorseless as nature. I've gone on, only caring about the purpose I had in mind. Listen, Brendick, we came here about 11 years ago, I, Montgomery, and 6 young men from another Pacific island. The place seemed to be waiting for me, and I started working immediately. I began with a sheep, but it died after 1 day. I took another sheep, and when I had finished, it looked quite human to me. But when it saw me, it remembered me and was terrified. These animals are too fearful and too stupid, so I realized that they were no good for man-making. Then I took a gorilla. Working with infinite attention and immense difficulty, I made my first man. Montgomery was horrified at first, just like you. With that animal, I worked mainly on the brain. I spent many months educating the gorilla man. I taught him the basics of English and gave him ideas of counting. He was slow, but I've met much slower men. He had no memories left in his mind of what he had been. When his scars were quite healed, I introduced him to the islanders, saying he was a castaway I had met on the beach. At first, they were horribly afraid of him, which, I must admit, offended me a lot. I was very proud of my creation. However, as he was very gentle, after some time they accepted him and started to educate him. He was quick to learn, very imitative, and built himself a hut very similar to the ones where the young men lived. Honestly, I think it was even better than theirs. One of them taught him to read a bit. Everything seemed to go on well, and I was going to write an account about the experiment for the English scientific community, when one day I found the gorilla man on a tree. He was making typical ape-like noises and gestures towards us. One of the islanders started to make fun of him. He jumped down from the tree and killed the young man before he could help him. Montgomery took his gun and shot him. His animal nature had prevailed on his new human condition. I realized I had to make my work better, but every time the animal nature was stronger. After so many years of failures and successes, this time I feel that with the puma, I'll be able to do much better. After all, what is 11 years compared to 100,000 years that man has taken to evolve into the present living being?
He stopped himself, exhausted and thoughtful. I asked, why do they live in those huts?
They go there because they're afraid of me and of this building. They remember the pain. Montgomery looks after them and has trained a couple of them to serve us. I think he likes some of those beasts. I feel repulsion instead, and I'm not interested in their existence. With the help of the islanders and Montgomery, they have invented the law. They sing boring litanies, build huts, and get married. But to me, they're only beasts. Now tell me, Prendick, do you still fear me now?
I looked at him, a white-haired, pale old man with calm eyes. I shivered, didn't answer, and gave the guns back.
You can keep them,
said Moreau.
Now go to bed and have a good sleep. You've had 2 very busy days. Good night.
I immediately stood up and locked the door. I sat down again and started to think of all the events of the last hours and Moreau's horrible narration. I was emotionally, mentally, and physically tired. At last, I put out the light and went to bed. Very soon, I fell asleep. The day after, I heard a knock at the door. I got up, put one of the guns in my pocket, and opened the door. It was Maling, who was bringing breakfast. Soon after, Montgomery came in, and I asked him, "Why don't these creatures rebel against you? And how is it that they never try to assault one another? They belong to different species, after all."
"These creatures," said Montgomery, "have no initiative. In their brains, Moreau has impressed precise ideas which don't allow them to revolt against human beings and break the law. Although they repeat the rules all the time, they sometimes break them, and the old instincts appear again. Above all, they mustn't taste blood, because this would trigger their most terrible instincts. Especially for the beast people of feline origin, the power of the law gets weaker when the sun sets. Darkness makes their true nature come out. They may become very dangerous."
Then Montgomery told me that on the island there lived more than 60 creatures made by Moreau. Actually, the doctor had made 120 of them, but many had died. The males were much more numerous than the females. The creatures were able to reproduce, but most of the newborn babies died very soon. When they lived, Moreau took them to give them a human form because, to his great disappointment, they were born with the animal characteristics of their parents. The three best-made beast people were the leopard man, a strange creature made up of a hyena and a pig, and Maling. At first these monsters filled me with horror, but then slowly I got used to their looks. When I saw these clumsy creatures, I thought that, after all, they were not so different from some human beings. Their grotesque looks reminded me of similar examples among men. Maling did not live with the others, but in a kennel next to the house. The creature was not so intelligent as the ape man, but much more obedient and the most human-looking of all the beast people. Montgomery had trained him to prepare food and to carry out all the daily housework. He was perhaps Moreau's most complex result, the assemblage of a bear, a dog, and an ox. He treated Montgomery with a strange tenderness and devotion. After breakfast and a long chat with Montgomery, we decided to go for a walk around the island. Both of us had whips and guns. While we were crossing a stretch of jungle, we heard the cry of a small animal. Then we noticed a tree without bark.
"Don't claw the bark of trees. That is the law. Are we not men?"
said Montgomery ironically.
"This is how they obey the law."
Soon after, we met the ape man and a goat man.
We salute you, other with a whip,
they said.
"There's a third with a whip now,"
said Montgomery.
"So look out."
"The third with the whip cries at sea. He has a thin white face,"
the goat man said, looking at me in a curious way.
"Careful. He's got a thin, long whip,"
said Montgomery.
"Yesterday he had blood and tears on his face,"
said the goat man.
"Men don't bleed. They don't weep. You and the master never bleed or weep."
"He has five fingers. He is a five man like me,"
said the ape man.
"He says nothing,"
said the goat man.
"But men have voices."
"Yesterday he asked me about things to eat,"
said the ape man.
"Stop talking nonsense,"
shouted Montgomery.
"You'll bleed and weep if you aren't careful, you cheeky idiots. Let's go, Prendick."
And taking my arm, he pushed me away. I went on with him. The goat man and the ape man stood watching us. On our way back, we found a dead rabbit. It was half-eaten and without his head. Montgomery stopped.
"Good God,"
said he.
"What can this mean?"
"One of your animals has remembered its old habits," I said. Montgomery's face got white.
"I don't like this,"
he said slowly. "I saw something of the same kind," said I, "the first day I came here."
"Well, what was it exactly?"
"A rabbit without its head. I think I know who the killer was. One of your monsters did the thing. I'm not really sure, you know, but I saw one of your creatures drinking in the stream."
"Sucking the water?"
"Yes."
"Don't suck your drink. That is the law. That's how these brutes obey the law when Moreau isn't around. This is how meat eaters behave. After a kill, they drink. It's the taste of blood, you know. What was the brute like? Would you recognize him if you met him again?"
"Yes, I think I would recognize him," I said. "I hit him hard with a stone. He should have a bruise on his forehead."
"Damn, I'll have to talk to Moreau as soon as I see him," said he.
When we got back home, Montgomery reported the events to Moreau, who took the matter even more seriously than Montgomery.
"We must give them a lesson," said Moreau.
"I'm sure it was the leopard man. We must solve the thing immediately."
In the afternoon, Moreau, Montgomery, myself, and Maling walked to the huts. We were armed. Maling carried a little hatchet. We stopped in a large open space. Moreau sounded a horn very loudly, and immediately the grotesque forms of the beast people started to appear. They moved towards us from all directions, singing parts of the law. The large crowd of monsters stopped in front of us and went down on their knees singing.
"His is the house of pain. His is the hand that makes. His is the hand that hurts."
And so on.
61, 62, 63,
counted Moreau. "I can't see the one who attacked me," said I. Moreau sounded the great horn again, and four more monsters appeared, among them the ape man and the leopard man, who had a bruise on his forehead.
"Stop singing,"
said Moreau in his loud voice, and the beast people sat on the ground and stopped.
"Where is the sayer of the law?"
said Moreau, and the hairy grey monster stood up.
"Say the words,"
said Moreau. They began to sing their strange litany once again. When they sang, "Don't eat meat or fish, that is the law. Are we not men?" Moreau held up his hand.
"Stop,"
he cried, and the crowd was suddenly silent. They all looked nervous and scared.
"That law has been broken. Who was it?"
said Moreau, looking round at their faces.
"No one escapes,"
said the sayer of the law.
"No one escapes,"
repeated the beast people.
"He who breaks the law,"
said Moreau, making a pause,
"goes back to the house of pain,"
exclaimed all the beast people.
"So, who was it?"
asked Moreau, looking into the leopard man's eyes.
"If you break the law,"
and he turned towards the crowd, "you go back to the house of pain," the beast people continued.
"The house of pain, the house of pain,"
cried everyone.
"Can you hear, my friend?"
said Moreau, turning back to the feline. Suddenly, the leopard man assaulted Moreau, who was able to dodge the attack. The beast ran away, and immediately all the other monsters followed him. The three of us and Maling followed them. I could hear the noises of the excited crowd. Most of them shouted,
"No one escapes!"
The fugitive was running on all fours, now just like a normal big cat. We ran after him for a very long time until we couldn't see him any longer. He was hiding in the forest.
"Careful,"
said Montgomery.
"He'll attack us when we find him."
Then I saw a pair of green eyes shining from behind the plants. It was the leopard man. He was hiding behind a thick bush and was shivering. I will never forget those eyes. He knew what was waiting for him in Moreau's laboratory. I felt sorry for him and thought that it was better for him to die immediately. I took out my gun and killed him. In a flash, the hyena peep jumped at him and bit deeply into his neck. At that moment, Moreau and Montgomery arrived, and the doctor hit the hyena pig with his whip, while his assistant kept the crowd away from the dead body of the leopard man.
"Damn, Prendick, why did you kill him? I needed him in my laboratory,"
shouted Moreau. "I'm sorry, but he was going to attack me. I had to shoot. I lied." The dead body was carried away by three bull men to the sea. Poor creatures, I thought. Moreau had taken animals which were happy to live with their instincts in their environments. He had made them slaves, he had made them behave against their nature, and had condemned them to live in terror. That man was completely mad. He was a monster. He had transformed innocent beings into poor things and without a purpose. Now I was afraid of the beast people as much as I was of Moreau.